SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
That's how it goes. And a very good morning, I guess. Sorry about missing that right there and having to do a double open. I had to shovel the walk. It's November 16th. Just when you think that your fall weather can't get worse, it does. If you don't shovel the walk and the front stoop, the mailman won't deliver. So there's an asterisk when it comes to snow, sleet, rain, and gloom of night. they should add, the appointed rounds will be put off 24 hours if you don't shovel your walk. When it snows before my birthday, which is November 20th, if it snows before my birthday, something's not right. It's out of whack here. I knew today was going to be difficult because you start out with the yesterday I had to ride to make a trip to Rochester yesterday, and that's why you got the best of. And I will say, I had a lot of fun listening. I rarely get the chance to sit like that. Rochester's 4 hours. So I rarely get a chance to sit and listen to him. And, of course, the show was a best of. Johnny and I were talking. Johnny had a segment during my drive home. Just like the show, yeah. had a good 25-minute segment with Johnny, and he acknowledged when I called him. He said, "Oh, what am I, filler on the drive home?" Yeah, that's exactly. No. But I said to Johnny, I said, "I never get to really, listen like that 3 hours." And he said, "Yeah, but it was a best of," said, "where you cherry pick segments. Try sitting through 3 hours of the, where there's one really good segment and six mediocre ones. That's a little more challenging." Oh, my God. That was pretty funny. It made me laugh. Well, Sirius 219 XM 201 Sports Zone 964. On Sirius XM Online. And our website, too. SteveBick.com. And I had to bring in the little box heater thing to take the chill out of the home studio, as it were. Casey doesn't have this problem. The biggest problem Casey has is taking the chill out, maybe, the air conditioning. Taking the chill out of the studio when he's left it up. 62 degrees, Casey's telling me. Oh, yeah, you got the willies out. There's nothing better than being in South Florida during the winter and, you go down to Miami and Aventura, and there are the Yentas, and they're wearing their fur coats. The fur coats get trotted out when the temperature, I think, what's the magic number, Case? 50? When it hits 50? For the mink stalls and, for Flemington furs. Casey says today, 60. He said there will be some fur spotted. And these are people that are really wearing fur too. This is not faux fur. These are fur wearers. These are old school. They're kicking it. They're OG fur wearers. before the consciousness set in. Well, the weekend is upon us, and there's lots of good racing. I don't know what's going to happen. I thought the funniest news of the morning was the NYRA notice, we get the texts, and the shocking news that they're off the turf at Aqueduct. Yesterday, the last three races got canceled when the snow set in, and some wind and visibility, and the jocks were not comfortable. So the last three races from Aqueduct yesterday got scuttled, and then things, the snow turned to rain, so it'll just be wet out there. You'd have to think they'll do everything they can tomorrow, I'm sure, to get the Red Smith in. And you know, the Red Smith actually came up with a pretty nice field, so it would be nice if the turf was good enough tomorrow to let that group of 10 go. Mike Maker, Zulu Alpha in there, Call Provision for Chad, and Spectre Lindley for Shug. Maker also with Bigger Picture, and a couple of others that kind of swooped in. Maker peppering the entry box, including a longer priced Soglio that Grand Motion had. Soglio in there too. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. And it's really too bad because the card tomorrow, there's also a state bred or a open company money allowance optional claimer kind of thing. And there is a good 7 furlong filly and mare allowance on the main. Very good field of 11. This is actually this was a nice card. So we hopefully turf course decent enough to get the Red Smith run tomorrow. But the reality is we're running out of opportunity, and it's been very frustrating. I mean, and to have that double wide turf course, as beautiful as it is at Aqueduct, to have that sitting there and, you know, to be assaulted the way we've been with wet weather is really too bad. Nick can't join us today. We'll talk to Nick next week ahead of the holiday racing. But a quick note about Wednesday, because we left you Wednesday and you had a nice carryover that ended up being hit by one, $91,000. And you know, the first winner was tricky. That was that turf race that looked to have a lot of nice maidens, and even on the main track, it still had a field of 9, and you had a 17-1 shot. Mark Hennig, who's already in South Florida, and you know, looking back at this race, and when the things came off and it got a little herky jerky, I kind of backed off, and we discussed it on Tuesday with Andy. Just, you know, gave it a glancing blow, but the winner, and this is a Bourbon Lane and Lake Star Stable product, Bourbon War. This colt is a son of my Conquistadori, who I'm sure you remember from Mark Cassie. It was a stake horse. And granted, she was an Artie Schiller and she was a turf stake horse, but she's by Tappet. This colt is by Tappet, and it was a $400,000 purchase. 17-1? I don't know. I'm not sure why. You know, it's still a Tappet colt for real money out of a stake winning mare. And just got absolutely ignored. And that started the sequence. I'm sure, you know, obviously one person had it. And, you know, from there, it was much more of a approachable and you know, mundane set of results. You had the 3-1 Our Girl Abby for Gargan and Clairvoyant Lady at 5-2. For Maya Engelhart and Transfiguration Stable, Mr. Buff, the wonderful Mr. Buff, for the Bromans and Kimmel. You had a medium, not an impossible horse by any stretch, a 9-2. Rodriguez, bit of a move-up horse, but on the sheets, actually, Royal Asset made a lot of sense. And then in the nightcap, you have the even money favorite. So 91,000. So the person that recognized the stake mare comes away and scoops that pot. So very cool. The Wednesday action, and then yesterday, of course, got not. I mean, it wasn't. They ran six races, and three got canceled. So we'll see about getting those feathered back in. And going into today, I actually did not look at today. I was more caught up with Churchill. There's a very nice set of races. There's also today, I won't say the last Stronic 5 because it might not be the last Stronic 5. We thought last week was going to be the last Stronic 5, but it wasn't. 17,800 last week for pick 5 hitters. And that also was a sequence that was not, you know, not overly daunting. A 2-1, but the two 2-1s, a 6, basically a 13-2. You had the 1 12-1 shot at Gulfstream and the first time starter, and then you had a 7-2 at Golden Gate, and that paid just under 18,000. And of course, it's a $1 bet. Same sequence today as last week. Laurel 8th, Gulfstream 8th, Laurel 9th, Gulfstream 9th, Golden Gate 4th. And it's, I've got it here in front of me. First level allowance at Laurel, then a maiden 35 going short at GPW. Back to Laurel for a nickel claimer. Maidens for 20 at Gulfstream then on the grass. And it closes out with a starter allowance at Golden Gate. Looks worth perviewing. Here's what we'll do today. We've got James Scully to kick off conversations. And we'll talk to James. He wasn't available last week. So we'll get his Breeders' Cup wrap-up. We'll actually start and finish the show with Breeders' Cup closeouts. This is like the remainder pile. This is where you get those Steve Haskin books from the 80s or the 90s. The unauthorized autobiography of Baffert. Scully starts us off, and we'll look at some Churchill with James as well. I know he's also interested in the Bob Hope tomorrow at Del Mar. At the end of the show, I'll introduce it that way, we'll bookend it with Nick Luck. You will not be out of luck because we've got Nick Luck. We'll talk to Nick, get his Breeders' Cup wrap and any thoughts he might have about the Cartiers. And whatever else, a Nick Luck visit is always fun. In between Scully and Luck, Mary Rampolini will cycle through. Mary's only covering, I don't know, 6 race courses this weekend. There's some high level quarter horse action, but I mentioned the Delta Downs Stakes. Delta Mile came up very good tomorrow. Tonight, of course, you've got the Treasure Chest, and you've also got the accompanying Louisiana Stakes. We have to talk about the start of Fairgrounds yesterday. Good kickoff to the season, in fact. And a number of jocks doubling up, and Mitch Merle tripled up. 3 winners yesterday for Mitch Merle. And in the Benson, in the Tom Benson overnight to kick off the season, a win for Gary Shearer. Always happy for the Shearers and for the Old Wellings. Nice win for Alan Bell. The construction and demolition, too, I think. The Old Wellings. The Old Wellings, I think, have a stake horse every stake this weekend at Fairgrounds and Gary. So congratulations, Old Wellings, long time listeners to the show, and terrific owners. Remember Daisy. And that was an exciting finish if you didn't see it. Remember Daisy and Eskin for More for Jim Hodges and Sugarland Thoroughbreds. That got things going. But in addition to Mitch Merle winning three, Sophie Doyle and Eduardo Rodriguez, they paired up for two wins. Tyler Kennedy with a pair of wins. Good start. Good start to the Fairgrounds meet. Lots to do. DeRosa later. Arno Delacour is going to be by, and Hammer as well. Stay with us. Scully next.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
DRF Sports Form Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Form delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and Kent DeSarmo and Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky, or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Like terrorists on a day of pressing it. I
We're back at the races, 20 minutes into Friday weekend preview, and of course, really the news of the week that was dominated by the sadness associated with Odonis Acuna and the accident a week ago tomorrow at Churchill, and the industry just responded so appropriately and so really magnificently. $113,000 has been raised in basically 5 days, five and a half days or whatever. And it's really, you read all the notes that people have left, and it really is heartening. And applaud everybody that's contributed. And if you are the type that gave anonymously, well, a thanks to you for all of you that, and there were some very big gifts donated anonymously. And it's for his wife and three boys. We hope for the best. And when Kenny McPhee can join us and update everybody, you will. Been very tough. And really, as sad as it is, it makes you feel good to be a part of a community that responds the way it does to these calls to action, and the generosity and the response is really on all these fronts. There's been any number of, and obviously St. Louis Ray was incredible what transpired, but this one for somebody that nobody, only people that would be on the racetrack really will know Odonis, and so countless people supported this that just know how hard everybody works to make the show go. James Scully certainly works tirelessly himself on his side of the community and putting information in people's hands and helping them understand the races. And of course, we went into Breeders' Cup with James and with Ed and with Scott Shapiro. We had a lot of fun with that hour-long roundtable, and a lot of good ideas came forth, certainly, James. And, as we talk so often, it doesn't have to be with winners. It can be with horses, even like an Arklo, who you reinforced, finishes fourth in the turf. And for people that keyed enable, having Arklo fourth was helpful.
Yes, thanks, Steve, for having me on. Good morning. And, it was, to me, I was, my take on the Breeders' Cup, it was, I thought it was great day of two days of racing. Friday had a lot of, I thought dominant performances, had a little bit of drama in the juvenile turf, but a lot of those races were over, and you could tell who the winner was going to be in upper stretch. And then Saturday just really cranked up the drama, the excitement level, just some really great races. And even though I wasn't on Accelerate, his classic win, I thought, really put a cherry on top of it. He was able to carry his form from California to Churchill, and that was just good for the sport. Him winning and getting Sadler a win, good feel good story after 0-45 record in the Breeders' Cup. And to me, there were three real debates as well, Cliffs Award debates fueled by the Breeders' Cup. You guys probably have talked about this some, but obviously the Accelerate Justify for Horse of the Year. And my take on all these races is, I don't begrudge anybody who votes differently than me. I think both the horses are going to be the top two vote getters, but both have good credentials. But I'm still going to go with the Triple Crown over Accelerate, and I'm not going to take anything away from him. But one thing about winning the Gold Cup at Santa Anita and the Santa Anita Handicap, those races don't have the cachet that they once did because of the Dubai World Cup. you know, our top older horses. We had West Coast this year. We had Air Gate and Gunrunner last year, and California Chrome 2 years ago. You know, are all pointing for that Dubai World Cup and then looking to return in the second half of the season. So, to me, it's just the Triple Crown. It's like, I mean, the 25-year gap from the 40s to the 70s, and then the 38-year gap from the 70s to 2015, a 37-year gap, you know, it's easy to forget just how impossible it has seemed at times to do that. It's the toughest accomplishment in American racing, and to win it as an unraced two-year-old and undefeated just adds to his legacy. I thought the sister Charlie and Nabel, you know, there's a perfect example of, would you reward a filly based in America that was clearly the best American-based turf filly, won the Filly AmeriTurf, had a great campaign all year long, or do you go for that European superstar that shipped over and won one race? And so it's a better season, or, you know, arguably the better horse in Enable. And I'm going to give Enable the edge in that. And then the third one that I think really, you know, could has the potential to be a close vote is obviously for the two-year-old filly. I know people have made the point that those divisional awards are more for, like, dirt horses in the U.S. because most of our racing is on dirt. But I think this year is the proverbial exception whereby newspaper record was so special, so dominant. And, you know, I think the best two-year-old filly, you know, on any surface. So I'm going to vote for her for champion two-year-old filly. I'm leaning that way, Steve.
Well, if we're going to have this conversation first, I want to we'll come back to another thing I want to bring up with you, and because I didn't get to it with Ed last week, but on this topic, you know, I've pendulum swung back to Justify after, you know, some real strong consideration of what Accelerate accomplished on the Philly side. I've been very willing, not just willing. I've voted for turf fillies, but only when there's been some murkiness to the attributes of the dirt candidate. There's no murkiness about what Jaywalk is, and I don't. It was one thing for me. It was one thing with Lady Eli and Take Charge Brandy. Yeah. I mean, that to me was just laughable. This is a different story. I mean, Jaywalk's resume is impeccable, and I'm hard pressed to get by her on that front.
Yeah, well, I think that Lady Eli may have been champion 2 year old filly if Take Charge Brandy didn't return after that huge massive upset and win the Delta Downs Princess Stakes and the Hollywood Starlet. I mean, that gave her two grade one wins on the year, that Starlet win did. And, you know, to me, you know, I can look at that Starlet win and the Frisette win, and, you know, those races are arguably on equal footing, because, you know, the Frisette, while she dominated in it, you can't take anything away from her. I just thought, you know, a little bit of it was newspaper record. It's just like, I mean, I, to me, she's better than Lady Eli. She's more impressive. She's more dominant. And really, I think just one of the all-time great performances. That juvenile filly's turf is worthy of a Breeders' Cup real highlights for years and years to come, because it was just an awesome race.
I'm not. It's not a knock on newspaper of record. It's that the resume of Jaywalk. There's no room for, to me, there's no room for an argument.
She didn't get beat in that Delaware Park Stakes.
The subsequent performance, doesn't question.
Those last two races were dominant. She was really won convincingly, and you know, her time was like the same time as the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. I think it was like hundreds of a second difference. So Yeah, I mean, I'm not taking anything away from it. That's why it's I think it's a great race, great races with like no wrong answers. That juvenile fillies, I mean, the 2-year-old filly division. There's no wrong answer either way in my mind.
Well, that that debate, we've got 6 weeks, and we'll see. The Sister Charlie, there again. The Sister Charlie to me is she's a she's got a resume. I've got no problem. I mean, when it came to the Ouija boards and the Goldikovas, I didn't mind voting for them.
Because there wasn't a dominant U.S. turf based female those years. I totally get it. I mean, she's had one of the most dominant seasons in the turf distaff division, in years. You don't see fillies that go from the spring typically all the way to the Breeders' Cup and win major Grade One races throughout the year like she did. So. Yeah, I mean, a great season and definitely makes for an argument against Enable.
Well, separately, I want to go back with you because I asked the question of the three of you on Friday, 2 weeks ago, about the use of the Brisnet Ultimate PPs. And after I got home from the trip, doing all the different house cleaning and summing up that you'll do, I got to my set of PPs that I was holding with you guys that day and went back and it is notable, asking you and Scott and Ed, you know, what you used in them as tools Monday through Sunday, but you know, particularly for Breeders' Cup, and the prime power rating came to bear pretty heavily in those results, including newspaper of record and game winner on Friday. Bulletin was the third and Jaywalk the fourth. But that actually, I think if anybody did straight handicapping on any tools, you probably have Bulletin and Jaywalk in your top three and your top four. And of course, Line of Duty was a little, it doesn't really fit in the PPs in those scoring systems. So that's a little, you know, that's a bit of a curveball. So you can't really hold that, the feet to the fire on that topic. And then on Saturday, Stormy Liberal was second. Sister Charlie was second. Roy H was second. City of Light, was first. Accelerate was first. Monomoy Girl was first. So overall, from 14 races, five winners that were, you know, the number one ranked prime power horse, three that were second. You had a race is Enable, and you know, I guess really the turf and the boys turf. Yeah, they're a little tough to, and even the mile, a little tough to include those.
Yeah,
so
and
if you
you're looking at more like the class ratings for those Euros, because yeah, like you said, they're not gonna translate to the prime power.
And you know, from that standpoint, James, what were you happy with on your handicapping? Obviously, not every opinion is going to work out. Whether rides go against or traffic, etc. You know, you also had some miraculous performances, including Arad Ortiz's performance on Shamrock Rose. What went right? What opinion was right, whether it cashed or not? Give us a bit of a postmortem on that front.
Well, a couple opinions. You know, I was just against Abel Tasman and Imperial Hint because I thought Abel Tasman had sort of hit that peak and wasn't no longer in top form, and Imperial Hint just didn't like the track at Churchill. Hadn't run his best races there now, three races over three there. He ran better to be third than he had his first two, but still he was the favorite. I wound up with like several seconds on Saturday, still managed to cash some tickets, but one thing I will say about the prime power, just, you know, for people listening who don't know what it is, it's we're basically giving one number to horses in a race that is based on our speed and our class and our pace numbers. And other factors, and the higher the number, the better. And obviously, you know, with something like that, to me, a lot of the value I get from that prime power, Steve, is in multi-race bets. Where, you know, I like to leverage an opinion in a pick three or pick four or pick five, and that enables me to spread deep in those other legs. And when I'm taking like a spread approach, I'm always going to glance at that prime power for any possible horses, you know, who might be third or fourth that I wasn't considering using. They'll bump up in, you know, in my estimation. So always, you know, that's a tool I love using, that prime power for like multi-race tickets and just, you know, just trying to get horses that I might not have liked on the first pass of handicapping a race, but they have good numbers, you know, in that column.
What makes it a huge Breeders' Cup if you get a photo or you get a trip? You know, what regret out there from the weekend?
Oh, well, I mean, it was a couple of I thought, like, you know, I liked Whitmore, you know, and I boxed him with Roy H and with Promises Fulfilled, but he walking out of the gate just, like, you know, cost him any chance. Now, I don't think he would have won the race, because Roy H just looked like a winner from, like, the entering the far turn to the wire, ran a huge race. But just, like, narrowly missing on, you know, World of Trouble, and was a key horse for me. So was, and just running second like that. And Wildcat, you know, running second. So I had some seconds with horses that perhaps didn't get the best trip. But, oh, and the other one that hurt me was the Sister Charlie running down my top pick, Wild Illusion, in that Philly Ameritrash. So, you know, it was close but no cigar, but was still happy, you know, felt like I was on it on my handicapping. And like I said, I was able to maybe cash some multi-race tickets, still lost money on the day, but, you know, was all over in a little bit. Zigged when I said zagged, it felt like.
Well, and that, you know, that'll happen on these days. Did you get a chance to peruse the BCBC results and go through the way the contest players approached it?
I have not. Have you been talking about that this week?
Oh, yeah. Quite a bit.
Yeah, I saw with Paul Matisse, you had him on and stuff. That stuff is always fascinating. I'd like to go back and check out the archive perhaps this weekend and do some of that dissecting, because it's always fascinating to see how the these top players are crafting their bets and putting them together. I mean, that race really was, you know, it came down to the classic. A lot of times that's what it always comes down to, that final race in those contests. And once again, being on Accelerate, you know, keyed the winner, you know, to first place.
Well, there's a lot to look at, and it's a lot of fun, and to see, you know how you approach and how, you know, other players, you know, some names will be new to you, but others are very familiar, you know, in the contest world. But when you see how much was bet on certain combinations and heavying up and key horses, and there's an education to be had, absolutely, and that's why, you know, that's why we spend as much time, you know, going over this kind of thing afterward as we do going in. I think it's time really well spent, because if you even if you don't have a great Breeders' Cup, it's really vital to go back and understand what went right, what went wrong, what you can glean from, you know, from your play, not just turn the page and, oh, I had a bad Breeders' Cup. And well, wait a minute. Why? I mean, was the bet structure off? Did you misunderstand the way paces were going to unfold in certain races? You know, who did you discount? Who did you overthink? I mean, there's a lot of comprehension that can come out of really a thorough rehash. And you know, one of your other things you can do is, if it's too sensitive to you right immediately, and this is true any day of the week, put it aside, put it in the corner of your desk, you know, put it in a file, and come back to it in a couple of weeks and look at it again, and then watch the races again, and you know, you might realize, you know, as much as you were beating yourself up, you might realize that, you know, your horse that you needed to be second or third, some horse stopped in front and in front of them, and they had to check up, and that cost you the difference between a winning Breeders' Cup and a losing Breeders' Cup.
Yeah, and there's like value. I mean, there's value to going back. A lot of the horses that were competing will be coming back and running next year. There's value going back and just like, you know, watching those trips again. I was stunned in that Breeders' Cup mile when I watched that race again. That move on Divisadero, to only get beat like a couple lengths like he did, I just was, that was a move that was a little bit peculiar where I thought Toledo went too soon on him. And went, you know, he went way wide on that turn, and, you know, but all the credit in the world. I mean, what a good effort by that horse. You know, it bucks car odds. Just, you know, you can come back, you can make some notes, you know, about these trips. A race like the Philly and Mare Sprint, which, you know, is a perfect race where there were a lot of horses that didn't get the right trip in there, and, you know, they'll be competing again either later this year or next season.
Well, as always, appreciate the rehash and all the information provided going in. And you know, the listening audience is remarkable, James, when it comes to, you know, to picking up little clues. And that's why I brought up Arklo. I mean, a horse that finished fourth, and that, you know, that was a hint that, you know, there's somebody out there without a doubt that hit that very nice super, and maybe they used you and me, because Sadler's Joy was my tri-key horse, and that worked out well. So we hope we helped people, whether it was with winners or with horses that you needed to have somewhere on your ticket. Let's talk about some tickets going forward, and the action at Churchill in particular. I know you're interested in the Bob Hope out at Del Mar, but let's talk Churchill for a little bit, James, including actually the last couple of days and today. There's really, the cards have been very good and very playable, even off the top.
Yeah, and it's you know, we had cold weather, rain, got even some snow last night in Lexington, but it's going to be sunny and nice the next 2 days at Churchill. It'd be a fast track today, and tomorrow they'll probably be back on the turf. They're off the turf today, and they got that River City handicap. So, you know, it's good conditions for the weekend. And today we actually have in race seven, Steve, we got a pretty nice little allowance for three-year-olds, and including a couple horses in there. Snapper Sinclair was on the Kentucky Derby trail when he ran a nose second in the Risen Star. Noble Commander looked to be pointing for the Preakness when he went to the Federico Tessio and wound up running third there and then got some time off. So people might be a little bit familiar with those horses, but this race also has a horse in number four, Fort Peck, who, whereas I think his rivals, Snapper and Noble Commander, are going to be bet a little bit on reputation. I'll take a horse like this that's in strong present form, and I'll single him in multi-race bets just to perhaps, you know, get a little separation with those other two premium names in there. Fort Peck, he's a gelding by Fort Larned, really ran a big race at Churchill Downs, two starts back, and he ran a nice race last time at Keeneland, that Bell Harbor, that Fletcher Cole ran a big race to beat him that day. I think Fort Peck is moving the right way for Ian Wilkes and is going to be a stakes horse next season at age four, and I like him in this race seven, this allowance today.
And this caught my eye too. And you know, you mentioned Cassie with the Oxley Forestry colt coming back here, second off the layoff. The Noble Commander, Snapper Sinclair, who was a personal favorite of mine, that, you know, was kind of being bounced around between turf and dirt. There's others too. There, Westerland, the Judmont Homebred by Frankel, who's now making a third straight dirt start after coming to the U.S. And of course, Gosden had him abroad. So this is a really good group going a mile and a 16th. There's also, James, I don't know how much if you did some multi work, but what about those fillies, the 2-year-old fillies in the 8th?
Well, yeah, I did. I looked at that, and you know, number 8, Kit Sith, is a sister to Whitmore. And, you know, Whitmore won his first time out by 7 3/4. Lance was precocious as heck. And, you know, this filly is by Atreides, who was a talented one-turn type by Medaglia Oro, who won like 4 or 5 starts and then was retired. But he's a young sire. And this filly just shows a bunch of fast work, Steve, for Ron Moquette. Looks like, you know, 5-1, there's no chance bettors will get her in that race. The other one that sort of interested me in there, though, was another firster, that Painter filly, number 5, Princess Z06. She shows some bullet works. It's a half to that New York Bridge Stakes winner, Key Loves a Fight. But her second maternal dam was a grade 2 winning sprinter, worth her oats and gold, if people of New York know. And this Painter filly for Ingrid Mason shows some good works, could be ready to go. I think that race is between those two firsters.
Well, and you bring up Princess Z06, and you know there is something here that's interesting, and that is that this was a filly that sold for just $4,500 at the October mix sale as a yearling, and people are going to see that and think, oh, this is a cheap horse, and you know maybe as a yearling she didn't look like much at the time. But it is a little strange because of the black type on the page. But Ingrid Mason, when you see a couple of bullets, I mean, certainly Ingrid Mason is good with a, you know, quick young horse. And that 46-2 bullet at Keeneland 2 weeks ago kind of jumps off the page a little bit. And she also worked on a wet track just a week ago. So, nice ID on Princess Z06. This looks like there could be any number of interesting players in here. We should mention Dallas Stewart too, James. Dallas has been sending out nothing but live horses all meet.
Oh yeah, yeah, definitely. And he doesn't get them too cranked up first time out. You know, being only 6%, but if he has a good one, I mean, we saw that on Travers Day where he won that maiden race with Elise Annabelle. If he has a good one, he can get it, you know, cranked up and ready to go that for that first start.
A quick note about a couple of other races from earlier this week, too, since we weren't together yesterday. The maiden from maiden race from the other day, because we had a couple of visitors early in the week, and Was that the first, the Olders, Fillies and Mares? Yeah, that Tipizar failed at 2-5, and this is on Wednesday. Tipizar for Moquette, and basically, you know, chased the leader for a little bit and then just backed up through the field and ended up last. Jose Sanchez with a horse that he owns and trains, a Drosselmeyer filly, Seeds of Time, ended up winning that. Everything else of note on Wednesday was off the turf. And then yesterday, how about Ben Colebrook with another 40-1 shot? It's this time a Claiborne. I mean, you got to be kidding me. A Claiborne filly by Flatter and heels at 43-1 yesterday pays $8,780.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, and you know what a fall he's having. Nick's gun. I mean, so, he's 70-1, 40-1. He's got a grade one win and a grade one second, and just a heck of a performance. Heck, he's got a horse in tomorrow, Steve, for the same connections. Wrath in that final race that ran first time out at Belmont Park and was second to a Pletcher trainee, Social Fan, and then came back last time in a salty in a key race. So the first two finishers, Tobacco Road and the second runner up, came back to win their next start. And but something that looked like went wrong that day, he's making his first start since July 29th tomorrow. So yeah, you always have to respect him because he's going good now. I'll give you an example today of a race where I looked at it and, we were talking trainers, just talking with the jockeys there. I mean, Edgar Morales won three races on Wednesday. He's the leading jockey right now in the standings. He's getting ready to lose his bug tomorrow, but he's just riding real well. And in today's 10th race, there's a horse number 11, Winner's Expedition, who's 12-1 on the morning line. And you know, just part of being an up and coming jock is picking the right mounts. I mean, he takes over on this 4-year-old filly who's been, you know, who coming into form, it looks like, a little bit for her trainer. And, you know, that addition of Morales could really make a difference on a filly like that. I mean, she's the one that, you know, I don't have the strongest opinion on her, but she's definitely one I would suggest people, if they're playing the late pick four or pick five at Churchill, include that number 11 in the finale.
Very nice. Matt Cordenbrook training. And I do want to mention one other winner, because we're friends on Facebook, and I was delighted for the Sandys, Steve and Brenda Sandy, and the horse that they claimed off of Wesley Ward and the Ramseys going back to last October, In the Mood, and they've had plenty of success. I mean, they've won, this is, I think, the fourth win within The Mood, and Sandy was tickled, particularly with the $89,000 purse. This was a terrific claim, this horse has made $140,000 since they got their hands on In the Mood, and they only, you know, they've only had 14 starters on the year, and they've won, this was their 15th starter on the year. They've won four races, the Sandy. So congratulations to Steve
really
Sandy. Good job.
Yeah, really a bold move by that In the Mood to yesterday on the far turn to just seize the lead and upper stretch, and I mean, those claimers. You know, those horses stepping up in good form, they can just, you know, once they get good, they'll rise right up the class level. There's no better example than Mike Maker. I mean, he's got the three horses, three top contenders, arguably, in that Red Smith, which may or may not run on the turf, but all three of those horses were former claimers, bigger picture,
yep.
Soglio,
that's
and
right.
Duo Alpha, and they're all like graded stakes winners, Steve.
Well, looking ahead to Saturday as well at Churchill, I want to pick out a couple of horses, and one, in fact, that that came up quite a bit with us this summer, and Harold Lerner and McPeak with Harvey Wallbanger, who has been second three times, Saratoga, Keeneland, and Churchill, ran into Complexity at Saratoga, and you begin to wonder, you know, 8-5 tomorrow, but this is a horse that Lerner talked to us about after they had won, he and McPeak had won the Alabama. This horse came up because Lerner was going to, they were going to start him before the end of the meet. We asked them what other two-year-olds, Seth Merrow and I, any other two-year-olds. He said, Harvey Wallbanger, we really think highly of. And certainly hasn't disappointed, in starting with the 33-1 when he was second to Complexity. So,
And I'll tell you about that Harvey Wallbanger. In that first race, Dylan Davis was aggressive from the start, from the rail.
Yep.
He finished 6 lengths clear of the next out winner. I thought in that race at Keeneland, you know, he broke forward, was in a good position, and then the jock just seized him back. I mean, he eased him back, it says 6 by 8, but I thought he was like 10 lengths out of it, and then he comes again. And then I watched that race last time, Steve, and just, I didn't know what he was doing. I didn't know why he was so far back. I like seeing the jock switch to Brian Hernandez. I think this Congrats Colt needs to be ridden a little bit more aggressively from the gate, and, you know, in betting a horse that has three consecutive seconds on his resume isn't my idea of a betting recommendation. But I could easily see him graduating today with a little bit of a better trip.
Well, and my question is if he's a horse that wants to, you know, basically either come up to a leader or let somebody pass him, and that, you know, three straight seconds, you begin to get worried. The sixth race tomorrow as well, you've got an all-bar Dale Roman's Elusive Quality colt, Come On Jerry, 6-1, and a $335,000 purchase for the all-bars kind of caught my eye. You also, one name that kept jumping off the page with these races, with these maiden races, James, was Federal Case, the race where Federal Case broke his maiden at Keeneland and, of course, turned around and sold for $650,000 at Keeneland this week. And there's quite a few horses that were behind him in that debut. And then, of course, we get to the feature, the River City, tomorrow. And you think they're okay for turf, yes?
Yeah, I think they'll be okay for turf in that. I mean, the big favorite in there is going to be Mr. Misunderstood. He was able to rebound earlier this year after a couple of setbacks, a couple of unplaced finishes, came back and won the Wise Dam in June. But I'm just a little bit worried now here in the fall. If, you know, coming off that third in the Taurus Mile and then that sixth in the Shadwell, if he's going to show up with just a peak performance, I'm giving a long look to number one, Master Marion, for Wesley Ward. That horse, you know, was going good last fall, strung together three straight wins, brought him back, you know, this year, and a couple decent efforts and shipped him to Ascot. But he has come back. That was a sneaky fifth, I thought, in that Old Friend Stakes. And then I like that effort. The one thing about this River City is there's just not much pace. And with Albin Jimenez on this Master Marion, I just think he's going to get a good ground-saving trip from the rail right behind, either the speed or if nobody wants it, he could be on the lead. And, you know, and that could be a prime spot to be. So I like Master Marion in there, Steve, a little bit. I mean, obviously, Mr. Misunderstood's look tough. And then you've got the Maker and Cox horses that, you know, can't be the other Maker, other Cox horse big changes. And then Oscar nominated and Sir Dudley Diggs. But it's a pretty competitive race, that River City handicap.
Well, and then there's another 7-furlong boys race that closes things out. And that,
well, I'm in on the Brilliant Racing, Steve. So we have that number 12. I've got a share on that horse. And, you know, first time out did not break. That last time he fell right on his head. And Rocco said he was like a little bit stunned just going around. But when they got to the end of the far turn, he really leveled off and ran by, you know, multiple five horses in the stretch. And he actually came home as fast as the winner did in that maiden race. So we love getting that outside post for number 12, Eskin, for it. Definitely some horses of merit in there. I mean, look at that number one, Equivocal. There with that filly. It's a tough little, with that cold, tough inside post. I mentioned Rap earlier, definitely eligible to run well. Frolic Moore will probably be the favorite. And this number 7, this Roman's Pearl and Cold, is out of Sweet Sympathy, who won her first four starts, including the Coaching Club American Oaks, I think, or the Alabama. So a grade one winner that was real precocious. So, you know, always like I usually fade Roman's first time out, but he'll send him out there sort of like Dallas Stewart. And this pal doesn't show fast works per se, but we're definitely a little intriguing at 12-1 on the morning line.
Now, two divisions, the 6th and the 11th, 7-furlong maiden colts. And the second division looks particularly to have some live horses that you should keep an eye on. And really, Churchill's been both the September meet and now, and of course leading up to the season-ending Stars of Tomorrow action, really has been a hotbed for your two-year-olds, male and female. James, how about you mentioned the Bob Hope was of interest to you tomorrow, too.
Yeah, so the Bob Hope got a 7-horse field in there of 2-year-olds. The last 5 years, Share Belief, Mastery, and even Grey Vito, who people forget had that knee chip, I think, you know, that thwarted his development into his 3-year-old season. But, you know, some pretty good horses have won this race in recent years. Used to be the Hollywood Preview before Hollywood closed. And Baffert has two in here, Metropole and Mucho Gusto, that both posted front-running wins. However, I think today, I mean, tomorrow in this Bob Hope, I see number 4, Steve, Savagey, being the, definitely not a Derby type out of a Bellamy Road, out of a successful appeal mare, but I like the way after, you know, when they dropped him into that maiden claimer, he led wire to wire in that Sunny Slope Stakes last time. He dueled throughout on the lead. Sparky Bill ran by him late. But I think there's a chance for him to get clear tomorrow, Steve. I think both Van Dyke and Talamo might want to see if they can sit and finish, you know, now that they're going into Stakes Company. And I'm going to give Savagery an edge in there, the number four horse.
Excellent. Well, there's plenty to keep everybody busy, even if the weather on the East Coast is going to be problematic. But looking forward, James, to the holidays, too, next week, Thanksgiving, and tremendous holiday racing. That's one of the best, typically, one of the best seasonal race weekends, long weekends of the year between Thursday and Sunday. So we'll look forward to some opinions next Friday. James Scully, as always, good luck this weekend. I appreciate it.
All right, good luck to you, Steve. Talk to you next week. Good luck to you.
James Scully, folks. James_Scully111. Let's take a break. Top of the hour. Going to get a visit in with Arno Delacour. And Arno, I wanted to catch up with him. No Dozing's performance in the Bold Ruler on Breeders' Cup weekend, and Chalon, and one of those, you know, one of those kind of underappreciated that gets lost in the crush of Breeders' Cup. Arno Delacour joins us next.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
DRF Sportsform Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sportsform delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and kept the summer on Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.